From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. Welcome back to our live broadcast from South Carolina. There's all kinds of political excitement in the state right now. That's because Saturday, this key state holds its Democratic primary. One of the frontrunners in the White House race is Illinois Senator Barack Obama. He's been campaigning hard here all week. Senator, thanks for coming on.
Hey, Farai, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for coming on the show again.
You bet.
So last night we were in Dillon, South Carolina. It's part of the Corridor of Shame. And you have made a real point about talking about the troubled schools. You were just there yesterday as well.
Right.
So can you break down in really simple, really specific terms, what would change if you became president?
Well, first of all, we would start investing in early childhood education at a much more significant level all across the country in poor communities like the Corridor of Shame, the PD area, Dillon in South Carolina. But obviously there are corridors of shame all across the country. And one of the most important things to closing the achievement gap, I believe, is making sure that children are prepared when they start school. So that would be step number one. Step number two would be to pay teachers more, but also give them more professional training and support so that they are able to work with kids more effectively in the classroom. Step number three would be to invest in early childhood, after-school programs and summer school programs that are particularly important for low-income students because they may not have supplementary activities during the summer. They don't have a quiet place to do their homework. And, you know, that would all cost about $18 billion a year, a significant increase in federal funding focused on schools all across the country, but with a great emphasis on poor urban and rural school districts that really need resources.
Now, Senator, how are you going to find that money when the economy is so bad, when the country is in debt and deficit mode?
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to delay or cut programs that I don't think are as high of a priority. And we've identified a range of ways that we can save money in terms of how we purchase goods by the federal government. There are some programs related to NASA, for example, that we would not eliminate but defer so that the spending is spread out over a longer period of time. There are a host of issues, programs at the federal level that I think are less of a priority than making sure that our kids are getting a good start in life.
Now, earlier this week, we were on the campus of Benedict College talking to students about the election, and we talked to one young undecided voter named Tynesha Williams. We wanted to play you a piece of what she had to say.
I would vote for Hillary because she has more experience and she's been around the White House for so long, and Senator Obama, he kind of scares me because he hasn't had as much experience, but he seems like a politician that I could relate to, so that's why I'm kind of leaning towards him, but not exactly sure.
How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, this is an argument that I think our opponents have been making throughout the campaign, and it is erroneously based on this notion that I just showed up in the Democratic Convention in 2004. I've been working in public service for over two decades now as a community organizer on the streets of Chicago, helping low-income communities find jobs for the unemployed, as a civil rights attorney, battling in the courts to make sure that people had access to polling places and that they weren't discriminated on the job, and as a state legislator before I got to the United States Senate, providing health insurance for people who didn't have it, passing the first law in the nation that required videotaping of confessions and interrogations in capital cases, providing tax relief to people who needed it. You know, the experience that I brought before I got to the United States Senate was on issues that the American people are concerned about. And since I've been in the United States Senate, I've moved forward on everything from arms control to alternative energy. So the key here is not the experience issue. The question is who's got the judgment and the ability to bring people together to push back against the special interests that dominate Washington, to connect with the American people, to listen to them and inspire them so that we can mobilize a working majority to move forward on the agenda that I think most Americans want to see.
So there's been a lot of debate over a report from Insight Magazine and Fox News saying that when you were a child living in Indonesia, you attended a madrasa or Islamic school. CNN, among other places, have worked to unpack or debunk that issue. How do you respond to that question coming up again and again in the news?
Well, the unfortunate thing is that it gets repeated, and it's completely false. I went to a secular school in Indonesia, which is happens to be a country that is majority Muslim. I am a Christian, have been a Christian, and we're now seeing emails that are being distributed repeatedly as part of a smear campaign or political strategy, which insults not only me and my Christian faith, but also tries to stir up anti-Muslim sentiment. And I think that's the kind of politics that people are weary of. It doesn't solve problems. It doesn't focus our attention on health care and education and what we're going to do about the troops in Iraq. And, that's the kind of campaign I intend to run, one that focuses on the problems that we face. And I'm confident that the American people will understand that, these kinds of scurrilous reports and rumors have been debunked, and we will continue to debunk them.
Finally, Senator, we've talked a lot on our show over the remarks by President Bill Clinton saying that your run was somewhat of a fairy tale. And some people we've talked to on air and members of our audience felt as though the president's comments had racial implications. Some people said, no, not really. Did you specifically read his comments as being racially motivated?
No, I didn't think they were racially motivated. They were just wrong. The president actually was referring to my opposition to the war in Iraq and suggesting somehow that I had not consistently opposed the war in Iraq. Everybody who's looked at my track record knows that from 2002, when I made a speech in front of 3,000 people saying the war in Iraq was a mistake, until today, I have consistently been opposed to this war. And so the president, I think, was massaging the truth a little bit, and that's part of sort of standard Washington politics. But I think at this point, we just want to move forward and make sure that we are talking about the issues that people are struggling with, particularly an economy right now that is teetering on the edge of recession.
That was Illinois Senator Barack Obama. How are top state politicians feeling about Barack Obama, the presidential race, and other issues? Joining me now, we've got Bob Coble, the mayor of Columbia, South Carolina, Jim Hodges, the former governor of South Carolina, and Tad Vyers. He represents South Carolina's 68th district, including Myrtle Beach in South Carolina's House of Representatives. Gentlemen, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm great. I have to say it's great to be here in South Carolina. So now we're going to keep it mainly local, but I wanted to do something quick. Governor, you are a national co-chair of Barack Obama's campaign, and we just heard from the senator. Why did you support him?
I'm immensely proud of the Obama campaign and my role in it. I supported him because I believe that he is uniquely qualified to change the way we're doing business in Washington. He, in my judgment, is a once-in-a-generation candidate. He's the John F. Kennedy of our generation. And I've been immensely proud of what Barack Obama has done, not only here in South Carolina, but around the country.
Is it transformative to have not just black Americans, but Americans of all races supporting a black candidate? Does it say something about the changes in the South and in other parts of the country?
I think it does. For each generation that passes, I think the issue of race is less prevalent. I was in the seventh grade when schools were integrated here in South Carolina, and I compare the feelings of my parents' generation to the feelings of my children about issues of race. And I think we've come a long way in the South, but we still have a long way to go. And the Obama campaign, it brings some of those issues to the forefront. I've been surprised and pleased at the number of white South Carolinians who who have taken immense pride in the fact that that the South, and particularly South Carolina, could play a pivotal role in allowing Barack Obama to move toward the Democratic nomination for president, and indeed being our first African-American president.
Representative Byers, you are a Republican. Have you made a pick?
In the Democratic
primary? No, in your party.
I will be supporting the nominee, whoever that is. We have some good candidates as well, and I believe when it's all said and done, I'm hopeful that the country will choose to elect a Republican for the next 4 years.
Mayor?
I'm for Senator Edwards and have been since 2003 when I first met him. I think he is someone I know and particularly like his wife, Elizabeth, and I think speaks to ensuring that middle-class families can enjoy and have a part of the American dream.
Well, gentlemen, I want you all to stick with us because we are here in the fine town of Columbia, South Carolina, and we're going to continue after this break with more from the state's politics. We've got with us Bob Coble, the mayor of Columbia, South Carolina, Jim Hodges, the former governor of South Carolina, and Tad Byers, a state representative for South Carolina's 68th district, including Myrtle Beach. We'll be back with more after the break. This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We're back in South Carolina at the educational television station for a special live broadcast. We're hearing how key figures in local politics are thinking about the election and local issues. I'm talking to Bob Coble, the mayor of Columbia, South Carolina, Jim Hodges, the former governor of South Carolina, and Tad Byers. He represents South Carolina's 68th district, including Myrtle Beach, in South Carolina's House of Representatives. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
So let me move on to the economy. This state is not alone in seeing some economic shakeups, seeing manufacturing jobs being lost, seeing that agriculture alone is not going to support a state. Representative, what do you think is the best hope for this state in terms of building a strong foundation or rebuilding a strong foundation for the economy?
I think there's a couple things that we need to address. I believe we need it's fundamentally vital for our education system to be on the right track and move forward. Nationally, we've made a lot of strides. A lot of those strides were made under Governor Hodges to my left, but we still have a long way to go. And I think that's the foundation of all of our problems, but also the best hopes for our futures. And I think when we have an education climate that is attractive, I think more businesses will come to the state because we'll have a more educated workforce. But I also believe that we need to do things to make sure that people keep their own money and are able to spend it more versus being taxed to death as well as regulated to death from the state and local governments.
Governor, there is a project from the state of Dubai in the Middle East offering to put $600 million of investment into South Carolina. What do you think of that plan?
Well, they're a client of mine.
That's what I was going to get to.
So I can do a little advertising for my business here.
Why did you decide to sign on with them?
Well, they came to me because they were interested in investing in Orangeburg, and it's historically an impoverished region of the state. And I was quite excited about it because we talk about Obama being a transformational candidate. This is a transformational project for a poor area of our state. And I think, Faraya, it symbolizes some of the opportunities in South Carolina because this project will create a complex of warehouses and logistics centers in this region and will provide anywhere from 5,000 to 10,000 jobs over the course of the next 20 or 25 years. That's an immense change for an area like Orangeburg. And I think it speaks to the hope for areas in South Carolina that are close to the port and the things that can be done there.
There was a real controversy over Dubai getting an interest earlier in America's ports. This is not the same kind of project, but is there a sense that people here in South Carolina or nationally could or should be concerned about this kind of money coming in from the Arab Emirates?
They shouldn't be. In fact, if you would ask me, I think that the Congress made a huge mistake in how they handled the Dubai issue. In fact, I think many of the members will tell you privately they recognize they made a mistake. Let's face it, the world has changed. This is a global economy, and we're going to find more and more international companies investing in the South Carolina and in the United States. If we were to shut our borders from any global investment, then I imagine our unemployment rate wouldn't be 6.5%, but would be 20%.
Mayor, here in Columbia, we've gotten to go to some of the great restaurants, and there's all sorts of culture here. And at the same time, you know, you see the train tracks, you hear the rumble, you see that the city seems to have different economic worlds. What are you doing to make sure that all of the people in your city have a chance at a sound future?
I think really two things. First, we're entering the new economy of research and technology with our USC research campus that we call Innovista, which is a very important way of increasing jobs and increasing per capita income. I think at the same time, we have to make sure that all parts of our city have the same investment. So we have four institutions of higher learning in Columbia, Benedict Allen, Columbia College, as well as University of South Carolina. We have North Columbia, Farrah Road, and other parts of our community that we have to and are investing in to lift up all parts of Columbia so that they can experience the reinvestment. What we're doing now, though, that I think is very important is working with our schools with a program called Together We Can to make sure that the community, both the business community and nonprofits, are investing more both time and money in our public schools.
Representative Vyers, you are someone who has looked at the voucher plan, which was voted down. Do you think that vouchers are an alternative to the traditional public school system? What kind of case would you make?
I would not put it as an all or nothing, an either or. I think that I think that the point that my support of school choice is, I believe that competition, a market-based competition, will give children and families options that they currently do not have. But also, I fundamentally believe that it will inject competition to make our public schools better. And I believe the arguments of and the real analysis of if it's going to be good or not for South Carolina is lost in the war of words on both sides. And I think we need to start at the premise of what is best for South Carolina school children, what can help them succeed. And I think we have to look at all options on the table and not shut any out.
Governor, when we spoke to Senator Obama today, who, again, you support, I said, how are you going to find the money to get the federal government more invested in education? And he gave us an answer about cutting back on other programs. But in states like this that need education funding, and frankly, most states would say they need education funding, do you really expect the federal government to come to the rescue?
Well, I think that the federal government needs to recognize that investing in better technology and better facilities is a national priority. Currently, they give us somewhere in the range of 7% of the money that we have for public education in our state, yet they seem to provide 90% of the rules. And that's offensive to a governor and I think to a state legislator like Thad. My sense is it should be a national priority. If we are going to be successful in the next 50 years in the United States, we're going to have to invest more and more wisely in education. And it seems foolish for the national government not to have the seat at the table in doing that.
I want to ask about a local issue, Pitchfork Ben. Ben Tillman was a South Carolina governor, U.S. senator in the late 19th century. He supported lynching African Americans and said that black people who wanted the same rights as whites should be killed. Now, he's got a statue outside the South Carolina State House, and one representative introduced a bill to have that statue removed. You, Representative Vyers, are a colleague of the representative, Todd Rutherford. Where do you stand on the resolution to take Pitchfork Ben off of the pedestal?
I think we have to be very careful to when we address this issue not to take a revisionist approach. Ben Tillman was a governor. He was a U.S. senator. And some of his comments that he made in the past were horrendous. But that doesn't change the fact that he made them and he did serve the people of South Carolina. There's a couple.
But did he serve all the people of South Carolina?
And that's the question. I believe what we should do is because, you know, we have I believe if we start focusing on just Tillman, where does it stop? I mean, we have portraits from Southern Civil War generals throughout the State House? Are we going to go after them? There are a couple great compromises on the table that I think will address the issue. I'm going to support one of them, but I'm going to let the author of the compromise talk about that, who you'll be talking to next. But I think we just need to present it. The whole history, the unadulterated version of the history, put it on the monument with him. You know, let everyone know what he stood for, and then we can hopefully have a brighter future.
Mayor, what would you like to see happen with this statue?
Well, I'm not in the legislature, of course, but I did suggest, and I think would, Ben Tillman was governor, and in 1940 they did put up a plaque that seemed to leave out every part of the. History in terms of how it affected African Americans. I think at a minimum, what we should do is have the correct historical plaque up that let our South Carolina historians, a diverse group, come up with the accurate history. And there are certainly maybe other instances in the State House and in Columbia where we have to make those corrections. But I think if we do it in that manner. You don't try to cover up the history or change it. You just have an accurate history.
Governor, one of my favorite quotes, and I use this probably too much, is William Faulkner saying, "The past isn't dead, it isn't even past." How do you reconcile the old South, the new South, not just in the case of this particular statue, but in moving forward with the future of South Carolina?
You try to understand it as best you can. I think Faulkner, who was one of my favorite writers, did put it well. Part of what I think you do is you can't fall in love with the past, as I think too many Southerners have. You need to look to the future and understand that I think our biggest problem historically in our region has been a lack of ambition and a lack of respect for education. And if you start with those two premises, then I believe we can move a long way toward being at the top of the country.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank all of you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bob Coble is the mayor of Columbia, South Carolina. Jim Hodges is the former governor of South Carolina. And Tad Byers represents South Carolina's 68th district, including Myrtle Beach, in South Carolina's House of Representatives. They all join me here at the studios of South Carolina ETV. Americans between the ages of 18 and 29 years old could shake up the presidential race. For the 2008 election, an estimated 50 million of them will be registered to vote. So it's no surprise that the candidates have blanketed campuses across the country, including here in South Carolina. So will South Carolina's younger voters continue the trend? Here to give us some insight on young voters' likes, dislikes, and expectations are three college students. Jacqueline Flemons, second-year law student at the University of South Carolina, located right here in Columbia. Also, Damian Ferguson, he's a senior at the historically black college Voorhees College in Denmark, South Carolina. And Shun Griffin, a sophomore at Furman University in Greenville, South Carolina. Welcome, folks.
Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
So, Jacqueline, let me start with you. What do you think has really happened in South Carolina as a result of all of these candidates really focusing on your state? Do you feel loved?
I think that would be an accurate description. It's more of a feeling like for the first time we actually might have a say in the state, in such a deeply Republican state, this might be an actual time for us to express how we feel and just feel lucky to be included in the democratic process.
Shun, I understand you're campaigning for a certain candidate. Who? And tell us what you're doing.
Yes, I'm supporting Senator John Edwards for president. I'm his upstate coordinator for Young Americans for Edwards, one of the many interns here in the state of South Carolina. I think the senator's a genuine gentleman from South Carolina. He's working hard for American people. And most importantly, he brought the main issue of poverty to the forefront between the three top candidates in the Democratic Party, which I think is very crucial for states like South Carolina.
Tomorrow we're speaking with actor, director, producer Danny Glover, who also supports Senator Edwards. Do you ever get flack from your friends saying, what you doing supporting the white guy? There's the woman. There's a black guy. Why are you supporting the white guy?
Yeah, actually, I have just a few months ago, I've just finished with Youth and Government and YMCA going around to different middle schools and high schools, especially trying to register young people in high schools to vote. And you get that question every once in a while, especially by, you know, black males that are juniors or seniors. And what I tell them is, you know, we have to go beyond partisanship, but also we have to go beyond, you know, color of candidates or their gender. You know, if we looked at Barack Obama, who's a phenomenal guy, I think, and if we just elect him because African-American, we're doing what every other generation has done in the past. We have to go beyond that and look at the essential qualities and the abilities. And while I think Barack Obama has some great abilities, I do think that experience is important, and looking at the issues of American people are also crucial as well in this election.
Damian, do you think, first of all, do you have any friends who are like, no way, no how, I'm not voting, it doesn't matter?
A lot of our students here at Voorhees College had that mindset at the beginning of this year, and we tried to change that mindset by letting them know to be involved and to get their vote out, because if not, we're only going to basically be stuck in the past as we were in past situations by electing officials because we did not want our voices to be heard, because everybody think it's a more seasoned thing for people to do, especially the older people. They think that's what it's for. It's an older people kind of thing to do. And we just want to let them know that it's not just older people, but us that actually has the voice to decide who holds the future of our country.
So what's been going on at Voorhees? Who's been going out and trying to get people motivated?
Well, we have a partnership with South Carolina State University, located in Orangeburg, South Carolina, and also Claflin University, in which we designate a couple of our students to go up there, and we have been sponsoring rallies in which we had Cousin Jeff Johnson and different primary surrogates come out and speak on behalf of each political candidate. More, I guess, geared at Voorhees, we have had Danny Glover speak on the behalf of John Edwards on yesterday evening. And on this evening, we have SNCC organization members coming to speak on the behalf of Barack Obama. And on tomorrow, we have individuals speaking on the behalf, Michelle Obama speaking on the behalf of Barack Obama. I think that once you involve all these celebrities or people of high caliber in these elections, people tend to want to flock towards those individuals because they know who they are and they kind of feel they can relate to them. So I think that by involving these individuals in this process helps students and younger voters realize, well, I do have a voice because, hey, Danny Glover telling me I have a voice, or Danny Glover is showing me that he's going out to vote, so I want to be just like him and I'm going to cast my vote.
I'm Farai Chidea. This is News and Notes. We've been talking about the youth vote and what it's going to mean for Saturday's primary in South Carolina. With us, we've got three students. Jacqueline Flemons, she's a second-year law student at the University of South Carolina. Also, Damian Ferguson, he's a senior at Voorhees College in Denmark, South Carolina. And Shun Griffin, a sophomore at Furman University in Greenville, South Carolina. So welcome back, folks. And Jacqueline, I'm going to go straight to you. Issues, issues, issues. We have been talking today about education, about the economy. If you had to name one issue that is really motivating you, what would it be, and what do you want?
I guess if I have to pick one issue that's really motivating my vote, it would be health care. It's something that's really important to me. And I think for a lot of people in our generation, a lot of college students or students who are over the age of 25 do not necessarily have health care from their parents and may work for employers who can't afford to provide them with adequate health care. So I think that a lot of the plans for which the Democratic candidates have laid out would definitely solve those issues for particularly people in my age range.
Damian, what would be your number one issue?
My number one issue is education. A lot of, if it was not for financial aid, then I think a lot of, especially African Americans, would not have the opportunity to educate themselves by going to institution of higher learning. So I think that with the plans that each Democratic candidate has put into place, that we can have a brighter future by involving ourselves in the political arena and by casting our vote. Because if not, then we're only dooming ourselves and our futures as far as our educational pursuits.
Sean, what about you? What comes to mind?
I think I have to agree with education. I think that it's crucial, especially in a state like South Carolina, that we have to make sure we have resources to send folks to post-secondary educational types of studies. We have to make sure that financial aid not only enhances the abilities and the opportunities, but also the federal government also takes initiative to take some of these large loans that students are taking out and probably offering some relief for that. You know, financial aid is only a small stepping stone to getting to college, but I also think that by educating our younger people, making sure funds are available, sending them to the proper schools, that they can have a better opportunity at life, and particularly for states like South Carolina, that is very important.
Sean, you've mentioned that you support Senator Edwards. Jacqueline, you are undecided.
That's correct.
All right. What are you trying to hear? What are you trying to hear from folks as they cycle through the state in order to help you make up your mind?
Well, I identify myself as an independent. I was raised to vote on the issues and not for a particular party. And in general, I believe that we need to make sure that we understand what is important to us before we identify ourselves with any political party. So for me right now, I really guess one of the most important issues for me is deciding which Democratic candidate could be viable and actually compete against a Republican. And so that's something that I'm, I guess, mulling over and trying to figure out as far as making my final decision.
So none of the Republican candidates appeal to you?
No, I would say if there were any, it would, of course, have been John McCain. But I definitely decided to forego the Republican primary, which took place last week. And I will be returning to Charleston to vote in the Democratic primary on Saturday. So I have a lot of thinking to do in the next few days.
Damian, do you find that there is a conversation around political parties and whether or not people, for example, who are independent have enough choices? Do you guys talk about, well, I want to have more variety in candidates, or are you satisfied with the variety of candidates that you've got this time around?
For myself, I believe that I like the candidates that are all running. I think they all have potential. As far as others being involved outside of myself, I think that they don't have a option because media only gives you a couple of candidates to really are at the forefront. So I think that if media basically gives everyone the equal opportunity to get their voices heard or to get their basically their stances on the political issues, then I think that they'll have an equal chance. But as of right now, I only think they only are offering a couple of candidates that opportunity, and it's not fair for everyone. But again, I like the options that we have now, but a lot of students really don't because they feel that they don't have they're only limiting themselves.
Jacqueline, let me ask you about, since you are undecided, a factor, which is age. A lot of people have talked about Barack Obama as part of a new generation. He's not 25, but he is 46. John McCain is 71, whose name you brought up. Does age influence how you think about people at all, generations?
I wouldn't say directly, but I think that deep down, a lot of younger voters are definitely trying to look for a candidate for which they identify with and whom they think will represent and support the ideals that they think are issues that our society should address. And so I think that that may play a large factor when you look at candidates like McCain and Barack Obama. Younger voters are definitely looking for a candidate who they think will work for them as well as for the older generations.
Are any of you guys interested in possibly running for office one day?
Well, I can say as a female, I'm definitely interested in running for office. As you stated, I am a student at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I actually hosted an event in November called Southern Ladies in Politics to discuss why women in South Carolina don't run for office. And part of the reason is because they just don't run. If they ran, they would have a great chance of winning, and I definitely think that that's something that I might be interested in the future.
Yeah, I can say for myself, too, and agree with that. I have some things in mind, but, going back to Furman right now, I'm actually in the election for student body vice president and make it the first African-American there. It was the first African-American class president there. And, you know, I think it's crucial that we start at such a young age, getting involved, being motivated, encouraging folks to take part in the democratic process. As far as minorities in South Carolina, I do think that our generation will be the generation to actually elect an African-American governor of South Carolina, you know, just make the legislature diverse as it possibly can.
Damian, any thoughts? Are you going to keep on voting?
Of course I'm going to keep on voting, because I feel that if I don't keep voting, I'm not going to have my voice heard. And as the young man just articulated, in my campaign as SGA president for my institution, I always made sure that the student body made sure that their voices were heard. And I think that's something that we keep pushing to the forefront, that your voice is to be heard. And we have such a rich history or legacy of encouraging our students to have that voice, because if not, you're only limiting yourself, and not only yourself, but your community and your family. So I think that if we just keep pushing the efforts or the youth to vote and make their voices heard, then it can change the mindsets and change people's views of how the voting process is basically ran.
Well, I just want to thank all of you leaders for joining us here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Shun Griffin, a sophomore at Furman University, second-year law student Jacqueline Flemons, who's at the University of South Carolina. They both joined me here in the studios of South Carolina ETV. Also spoke with Damian Ferguson, who attends the historically black college Voorhees in Denmark, South Carolina. He joined us by phone. While we're here in South Carolina, we're following not only the presidential race, but how politics boils down to very personal and local issues like education. The college students we just spoke to put education front and center, and so are a group of schools who are actually suing the state of South Carolina for more resources. This group of poor and rural schools lie along Interstate 95 in what a documentary called The Corridor of Shame. Dillon School District 2 is part of the Corridor lawsuit, which is now in the appeals process. Dillon is an hour and a half from where we've been reporting this week in Columbia. We went to the district's only junior high school, J.V. Martin, to get an in-depth look at the issues one of these schools is facing. You can't tell by looking at J.V. Martin from the outside that this is a school where students have to wear coats, hats, and gloves in class in the winter. There's no heat or air conditioning. School Secretary Cynthia Thomas thinks the students, including her own daughter, deserve better.
I think it needs a lot of structure and work. I think they put a lot of paint and different things over it to make it look presentable. But when you go to the core of things, you can tell that the foundation of some things are just not stable and it will not last for long.
Cynthia says it's hard to improve the schools when families in the neighborhood are struggling.
This area was so focused on factory work, where we had a lot of jobs that are shut down. People can barely find decent jobs that start off with a good pay. My thing is, if somebody make just a basic $8 an hour, that's just $300-something a week. And by the time all the things are taken out, you very have much to live off of. And I think that is a lot of the frustration why people are not motivated, maybe. So I think that's, you know, some of the things that I see as a parent.
Cynthia's daughter, Mykea Murphy, is in eighth grade at the school. She's a lovely young lady with freshly cornrowed hair. She says her favorite type of music is Christian. And although she tries hard not to criticize her school too much, she admits that her friends do complain about the conditions.
Usually they talk about mainly the white building because it's so old, and they crack jokes on it and stuff, and they just say it's so old and we need new buildings. Like, they had to vote not too long ago about if we should get a new school or not, but they didn't really care, and they didn't tell their parents to vote because we're going to be at the high school next year. So, like, even though I'm going to the high school next year, I have to think about my brother, my little brother, and all the other people that I know that's coming to J.B. Martin.
The students and the parents aren't the only ones worried about conditions. J.B. Martin's principal, Amanda Burnett, described one of the classrooms.
It's a raw cement floor, and it used to be a shop. So you can imagine, you kind of get that visual of what a shop or a warehouse-type place, the very high ceilings. We have to hold class in there. It's very drafty. The furniture in there is old and it's broken. And it's just not an ideal place for students to learn.
In fact, the main part of J.B. Martin is 111 years old. That means it's nearly 600 students are in the oldest classrooms in South Carolina. But state law, says Principal Burnett, makes it difficult to pursue funding.
Unfortunately, when the South Carolina State Constitution was written, the framers used verbiage that hasn't been very flattering for the educational system. The way the Constitution reads, it says that the state's responsibility is to provide a minimally adequate education. Certainly, we want more than minimally adequate for our students. They deserve better.
For Principal Burnett, better doesn't just mean heated classrooms. It means making sure each student is performing at least at grade level.
We have a student body of about 560 students. About 187 of those students read at least three grade levels below. We have some students who do not recognize all of the letters of their alphabet. And we've been working very hard on literacy since school started in late August. And we've been able to make some resounding gains. We just were we're looking at some test scores that came in from our winter testing. And some of those students have moved 2 to 3 grade levels in that short length of time. So we're very pleased with that, but we still have a long way to go.
In fact, Burnett was brought in specifically to turn around the school after it scored below the standards of the federal No Child Left Behind laws for several years in a row. Ray Rogers has served as the Dillon II District Superintendent for 17 years.
In this school that you're sitting in today here at J.B. Martin is 88% free and reduced lunch. That and anything that shows poverty is by the federal levels over 40%. We have some schools that are 99%. So just those figures itself, it just jumps out at you. So the kids come to the table. They come to school, and the school has got to be pretty much everything for as far as their education is concerned.
Principal Burnett says she doesn't get a lot of help from parents.
Parents in this area in the past have not valued education like we would like for them to. Many of them are not high school graduates. About 60% of the people in Dillon County are not high school graduates. Certainly, we want to encourage them to be involved with the school and to make educational decisions that best benefit their students. These parents went to school in this building, too. This building has stood here since 1896. Unfortunately, this community has accepted that that's what education looks like.
It's fallen largely on the district to fight to improve the schools. In 1993, Dillon II joined a coalition of school districts, which filed a lawsuit against the state. The suit claimed that the conditions of their buildings were below state minimums. An initial ruling acknowledged that conditions were bad, but they still met minimum standards. Now the case is under appeal at South Carolina's Supreme Court, and Ray Rogers is still up for a fight.
You know, I didn't ask to be at the forefront. I guess it just kind of fell naturally because, you know, I had a decision to make. Do I just stay under the radar, back up, say nothing, protect myself, protect the district, let somebody else do it, or do you tell what you really feel in your heart? You know, I'm in the point in my career that I could go home tomorrow. If needed be. But if it helps the kids across the state and across the nation, then somebody needs to say when there's inadequacies, something's wrong. And what better position to say is a superintendent of one of the districts that are saying, this is a fact, come see.
The race to the White House has helped elevate the corridor of shame to the national spotlight. Several presidential candidates have visited the region. In fact, as we left Dillon last evening, Senator Obama was on his way in for a rally at the high school. Local residents aren't waiting for the candidates or the state to take action. In 2010, a new middle school is scheduled to open after this economically stretched town voted to raise the sales tax to build their school. Ray Rogers sees it as a step in the right direction.
They know that I'm fighting for their kids. And, you know, when you're fighting for kids, it doesn't matter what color you are. It's what's in your heart that matters. People want, doesn't matter whether you're poor, rich, or whatever, you want the best for your kids. Sometimes you don't have the means to get the best. But they stepped up to the plate, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, everybody in this county knew that it was past time to do something, and they showed it when they went out to vote.
The big question in South Carolina right now is, how will the local vote influence national leadership? And who will make a difference for the students in South Carolina and throughout the nation whose schools are failing them? We should note we put out calls to the state attorney general's office to get the state's view of the ongoing lawsuit. They did not offer us a guest or a statement.
Rock, jazz, urban, classical, world, folk. Discover old and new favorites in a variety of genres at NPR's music website. That's at npr.org/music.